At the age of 25, he received his full ordination as a Buddhist monk. You can receive this higher ordination, as it's also called, at the age of 20, but as he was busy with his studies, he deferred it until he was 25. And after that event, from the age of 25 onwards, he was fully occupied with both study, because he never gave up his studies, and also with teaching. And the remaining roughly 30 years of his life were passed in this way, studying, writing, and teaching. And in the course of these years, he gathered, of course, many disciples who, on account of their devotion and dedication to the cause of Buddhism, on account of the purity and the holiness of their lives, gradually became known to the people at large as the Gelugpas. Gelugpas means the virtuous ones, or if you like, the strict ones. And they were so called because they, following Tsongkhapa's precept and example, insisted on a stricter observance of the Vinaya than was usually customary at that time. And this involved for them a total prohibition of marriage as well as of alcohol. In the West, to Western scholars, the Gelugpas are usually known as the Yellow Hats, in contradistinction to members of the older schools who are known as the Red Hats. And you may wonder what the basis of this distinction is. Some of the Kagyupa offshoots are called the White Hats, and others are called the Black Hats. And I remember when I was sometimes speaking to Tibetan Buddhists in Kalimpong, at the lectures we used to have periodically at the Kalimpong Town Hall, I used to tease them a little and say that I get confused with this Tibetan Buddhism, all these yellow caps and red hats and white hats and black hats. I'm not quite sure what it's all about. But at least we can be clear as regards the yellow hats and the red hats. In certain tantric ceremonies, at the time of tantric initiation, at the time of transmission of power, about which we shall be learning something in a few weeks' time, the officiating lama, or the guru, he puts on a cap. In the case of the Gelugpas, this is, of course, yellow, and in the case of the Nyingmapas, it's red. But there's a meaning, there's a symbolism in this. He puts it on at those moments in the ceremony or in the initiation when mentally, through meditation, he is identifying himself with the Buddha or Bodhisattva whose initiation he is giving. So that when this sort of solemn moment comes, and it is a very solemn moment, when you see an acolyte handing the yellow cap or the red cap, as the case may be, to the guru, it's usually handed very ceremoniously on a little piece of silk or even on a cushion or something like that. And when you see him putting it on, then you know that a very important moment has been reached in the ceremony, and that he is at that moment meditating. He probably has his eyes closed and he is identifying himself in his meditation with the Buddha or Bodhisattva. It may be Avalokiteshvara or Manjushri or Amitabha, whose initiation he is then about to give, so that you feel that you are getting that initiation, as it were, from the Buddha or Bodhisattva himself, through the guru or through the teacher. And after that moment has passed, when some other part of the ceremony comes along, then that hat is equally solemnly taken off and given back to the acolyte, folded up and put away. And it may be that in the course of one ceremony or one initiation, as I've seen myself, the red or the yellow cap or hat will be put on and taken off five or six times or even more than that. So therefore, this isn't something comparatively extrinsic to Tibetan Buddhism, this question of the hat. It is something of a quite great practical importance and symbolical significance. So up to the time of Tsongkhapa, all the lamas, following the Indian tradition, used to have red hats or red caps for this particular ceremonial initiatory purpose. But Tsongkhapa wanted to make a distinction a rather obvious distinction, a very visible distinction between his followers and those of the existing school. So he changed the colour of the hat used in these ceremonies from red to yellow. And in this way, the Gelugpas came to be known, sometimes in Tibet itself, as yellow hat or yellow cap lamas. And some Western scholars have taken up this title and used it generally instead of speaking of the Gelugpas. Now, in the course of the lifetime of Tsongkhapa, three great monasteries were founded by his followers, by his monastic disciples, on behalf of the Gelugpa school. And they were all founded around Lhasa, that is to say, around the capital of Tibet. And these were the three great monasteries of Ganden, Sera, and Depung. These survived right down to the present, or practically to the present. They're no longer occupied. They've been, I believe, seriously damaged by the Chinese, but up to the Chinese occupation, there were at Ganden, as far as I recollect, about 700 monks. At Sera, about, as far as I recollect, 300 to 400, and at Depung, even more, 4 to 5,000. They were almost like monastic cities, or at least monastic towns. But even during the lifetime of Tsongkhapa himself, the beginnings of this development took place, and these monasteries were founded. Tsongkhapa himself died in the year 1419, when the Gelugpa order and the movement which it represented was already very well established and with a firm footing in the religious life of Tibet. And thereafter, the anniversary of his death was observed every year as a great festival by all Tibetan Buddhists, not only by the Gelugpas themselves, but even by the Nyingmapas and the Kagyupas. All Tibetan Buddhists, on the anniversary of Tsongkhapa's death, joined in honoring his memory. And the way in which they do this is rather interesting. They do it by way of a festival of lights. In a few days' time in this country, we'll be having a sort of festival of lights, if you can call it that, on the 5th of November. But on the anniversary of Tsongkhapa's death, there's a festival of lights of a rather different character. And what happens is this. As the evening draws on, as it begins to get dark, every house, and certainly every monastery, every temple, puts out all round in the windows, along the parapets, on the flat roofs, on the windowsills, they put out scores, even hundreds, even thousands of tiny oil lamps. They may be just little tiny cups filled with oil with a little wick, or they may be filled with clarified butter, and they're lit, and you can see them in rows. It's much more beautiful than rows or strings of electric bulbs, and I can assure you. And you see these all over the town, as I've seen them in Kalimpong, at night on this occasion. And it reminds one very, very much of the Indian festival of what they call Diwali or Deepavali, when also lamps are lit round all the houses and temples and shops everywhere in the same way. The Indian festival, of course, is to celebrate the return of Rama to India after he had conquered Ravana in the island of Lanka or Ceylon. But in the case of the Tibetan festival, the Tibetan festival of lights, it's in honor of the memory of Jetsung Tsongkhapa on the occasion of his death anniversary. As I've mentioned, Tsongkhapa was a voluminous author. There's a standard collected edition of his writings in Tibetan, and they fill 16 massive volumes. Many, many thousands of pages. His two principal works are, first of all, the Lam Rim Chimo, and secondly, the Nga Rim Chimo. The Lam Rim is a survey of the whole spiritual path according to the Mahayana tradition. The name literally means the great stages of the path, in other words, the spiritual path. And he discusses in detail the practice of the paramitas and so on, the perfections with citations from innumerable Buddhist scriptures. The Ngāring Chimo is a similar account of the tantric path, the mantrayana, the vajrayana, and Ngāring Chimo means the great stages of the tantric path. And these two, very encyclopedic, these really highly systematic, these really massive works are the basis of Gelugpa studies. Tsongkhapa himself made a shortened version of the Lam Rim for those who were of lesser intelligence, and this is the one which even the monks usually study, because the big one is very, very difficult and very abstruse and technical indeed. There are also, by Tsongkhapa, a number of commentaries on scriptures and a number of minor works, rather beautiful ones, one of which, in fact, I myself had rendered into Tibetan some years ago. It was published, incidentally, in the Middle Way, I think about 6 years ago.